All right, what do you think? Should we start?
I'm starting to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
Every minute you waste, I'm 1 minute closer to death.
Yeah.
That's one way of looking at it. Okay, my name is Steve Arnold.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Steve.
And I hope to remember names throughout the week for all of you. I tell my memory care residents, give me 12 times to get your name, especially if I don't see you all the time. So I'm a deacon in the ELCA, and I was a deacon type in the Missouri Synod for most of my adult years, until about 6 years ago. And I served in parish ministry in Detroit and in Phoenix. And then I was asked to come up to Concordia University in St. Paul to teach people to do what I was doing. And so I've worked on that time in faith formation and teaching people to be lifespan educators and leaders in parishes. So that's kind of what I did there. And most of my work was really youth and young adult ministry. But I got involved in Detroit with a thing called Project Compassion. And I was training volunteers to go into inner city nursing homes. And then I would cart them down in the Love Bus. Now this was 1970, and so the Love Bus was painted in psychedelic colors with the flowers. Remember the flowers from the 70s? And on the little marquee on the front of the bus, it said heaven, you know, for the destination. And so I would drive them faithfully twice a week down to the inner city nursing homes, and we're doing all this stuff. And one day we're coming back, and all these cars coming opposite direction were blinking their lights at me and honking. And I thought, what am I doing wrong? Well, behind me was a funeral procession. Destination heaven, you know. But I didn't know they were back there. It was just hilarious. So that's kind of my life. Those are the kind of things that just happened to me. So anyway, I got on the faculty at Concordia, and they required me to get a doctorate. And that had never been in a life plan. So what am I going to get it in? Well, I spent all these years in youth and young adult ministry, and I did come to the conclusion that they go home. And so I got my doctorate in adult ed and development to work with parents, grandparents, significant adults in kids' lives, and to kind of equip them to be youth ministry in the home. Well, that just fueled my interest in gerontology. And so I continued to work in aging. And finally, I got tired of going to meetings. So I retired from teaching, took training to be a chaplain, and now serve elders in elder care facilities. And so sometimes, I love the terms. Anybody work in that field? So if I told you I worked in a SNF,
Yeah.
Anybody know what that is?
Skilled nursing facility.
Skilled nursing facility. I love that term. Yeah. It's not a nursing home, it's a SNF. Isn't that cool? And the one thing, when I went into this as a chaplain, no way was I going to work with dementia. Scared the bejibes out of me. And so I was going to avoid that. I wanted to work with old people and play bingo and cards and talk and, you know, sing Let Me Call You Sweetheart and just fade out that way. Well, the first facility I got assigned to, 80% of the people were in some phase of dementia. And I just kept getting involved with it, and now I just love it. I'm having a terrible time trying to retire again because I just don't want to leave my people. They're just cool. So that's how I got into this whole aging thing. And then the more I got into aging, everybody's aging. From the moment of conception, you're aging. And so aging boldly, it doesn't make any difference if you're 70, 80, or 10 is the same principles that you're teaching at every phase along the way. What we're really talking about is bold living. And so that's what I want to try and emphasize. We don't want to sit here, I'm going to concentrate on the 55 and older crowd for obvious reasons. But I think we need to keep in mind that this is a lifespan issue. And so we want to kind of build good skill sets. I titled this thing today, Don't Be a Victim, because my observation, well, I chase squirrels, so just be with me here. But I heard once from, I think, a sociologist that there's a difference between an immigrant and a refugee. And their definition was that an immigrant has come here because they want to. And they want to invest in it, and they want to, you know, move into a new life. A refugee is feeling forced out, and they don't want to leave, and they have to leave. And so all they ever want to do is go back home. Well, I kind of apply that to aging. Because some people just cannot accept the fact that they're aging. And they resist it, and they fight it, and they feel victimized when things happen, you know. And really, aging is something, in order to do it boldly and successfully, is something we need to embrace. And accept the fact, you know what? I'm not a good basketball player anymore. Now, to be honest, I never was a good basketball player, but I'm certainly not going to become one now because of various physical reasons. But we're going to talk later in the week about the importance of resilience and adaptation. I read an article about a woman in Plainview, Minnesota. I've even been to Plainview. 111 years old. She lived alone in her farmhouse outside of town. She raised all of her vegetables. She cooked dinner for people once a week. She did cards and all this kind of stuff, and was still baking bread. But she took the crock and put it on a chair seat, because she couldn't lean into it on the table. So she adapted her bread baking skills and kneaded the dough from the seat to the chair. That's aging boldly. Don't tell me I can't do it. And, you know, my mom, somebody said to her one time, well, you know, what's it like being 80? And you know, what are you doing to be 80? And she said, I don't know, I've never been 80 before, you know? And that's how we approach it. Who says we have to behave a certain way? So when we talk about aging boldly, a phrase that my daughter uses that I kind of like is, you have to do you. Not somebody else. Do you. Now some people, I've noticed, run marathons at age 85. And they're doing who they are. I do not run marathons at age 71, okay? You gotta do you, and we wanna spend some time exploring what that means. Now, as I said at the orientation, you know, folks, you're bold for being here. What it takes to get to Holden is not something an amateur sets out to do. So I know you're there, but what we're gonna spend some time is doing some sharing with one another about how we find it's helpful for us to age boldly, and it may not be your thing. So there's no guilt trips involved here, okay? You gotta be who you are, and that's the beautiful thing about being older. You have a much better sense of what that is, and then do it. I'm gonna stop for a minute. What do you think about that? I'm hoping we can talk to each other.
I mean, I guess you can't be anybody else, so you might as well be who you are. And you don't become a different person just because you
turn 60 or whatever, so.
Well, but don't you get people to say, you're not acting your age. You're not dressing your age. Now, there are just certain things when you get to a certain age that may not work well for other people. If I want to wear Speedos, I'm going to wear Speedos. They have to deal with it. Now, oh, you know what I did my kids one time? I was at a store and I texted them and I said, oh, I just bought Speedos. And they're texting me back, just going crazy. So I sent a selfie. I bought Speedos swim glasses, put over the goggles. But anyway, yeah, but people say, don't, you got to act your age. Or what are you doing that at your age for? My daughter's father-in-law, 71, just fell off a ladder doing something. What are you doing up there at your age? Well, he's been doing that for 50 years. I'm dangerous on a ladder, you know? So, you know what I mean? Sometimes, or my kids will say, Dad, you're too old for that. No, I'm not. So, I think sometimes we get confined by the opinions of other people. And we need to kind of experience. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my 86-year-old mother-in-law that lives in Minneapolis just had a bicycling accident. And her two other sons are just, we got to get mom off the bike. And my husband, her son said, she'll die if we try to keep her from bicycling. And yeah.
Well, but again, adaptation. I'm probably going to get one of those three-wheelers because my balance is not so good anymore.
Yeah.
So, okay, then I can still bike. Yeah, but you're right. Yeah, how do we do that? Other thoughts?
I have a thought. Go ahead.
Well, the pressure also by this culture is to present well and to pretend you're not aging. So I think sometimes we get wrapped up in that race of buying things, doing things, and pretending by buying the right masks and building the right facades that we're not in that journey. And so we do stupid, I think, and we just aren't being ourselves.
How many friends I have that need to use walkers and refuse to use walkers because they don't need them. It's like,
they don't want to be needy.
They don't want to be associated that's an elderly activity, and they're not elderly.
Well, guess who got tackled with that yesterday? Is the guy in here that confronted me about walking stick? He was using his, and I wasn't using mine, because I said, I don't want to be dependent. I'm trying not to have to do it. This is all uneven ground. What in the world was I thinking? So I immediately went and got my walking stick, because I don't look good flat on my face. But exactly. And, you know, the creams that you can buy to make your face look like you're 19 or something. Well, there's a new one that's got, it's a cream you put on that's got Botox in it or something. Because we're so desperate. But remember, folks, we are the generation, and if you think back, we didn't trust anybody over 30. Remember that in the 60s and 70s? Don't trust anybody over 30. Now we say don't trust anybody under 30. So, yeah, the youth culture, I really get tired of hearing people say, they're young at heart, or, you know, that kind of thing. No, they're exuberant about life. It has nothing to do with age. And so these are the kind of things I think we need to take a look at. Even though you're bold and you're out here and you made it here and you're having fun out here and all that good stuff, we all have issues with aging. And we're going to hit on a lot of those this week. I just moved from my townhouse, three-bedroom and a medium room, to a two-bedroom, two-bathroom apartment. And we're going to talk Wednesday about downsizing. And the book, anybody read the book, Swedish Death Clean?
Yes.
The fine art?
I've heard about it.
Isn't that a good book?
Yeah.
So, these are the kind of issues, no matter how bold we are, we got to take a look at. All right, so I think we're going to be the right size to pull this off in a certain way. I have a set of cards up here, and I'm going to invite you to take two. Yeah, and you may have to share. And we're not going to get through everybody as much as I would like to, but I think we're going to try this anyway. And I want you to pick one card in the picture that for you is something really exciting about aging. And then pick one that kind of expresses how you're scared about aging. Okay? So it's all right to get up and walk around. Do not fight over the cards. You're in the kindergarten and we play well in the sandbox. One that excites you, one that scares you. And you can, two people can use the same card, so feel free to do that. If you think somebody stole your card.
Why don't you grab a card for me anyway?
I don't know what you think is good.
But you're going to tell me.
You got yours?
Yes.
You didn't share? Possibly.
Okay.
Everybody have one or getting close? This is not going to be your doctoral dissertation, so you can relax. Well, you know, it's not with me. Either it excites you about aging or scares you about aging.
It's my challenge.
No, that's not one thing. No, we don't, you know, I want us to do some sharing because it's going to help me hear where you are on all this and foster discussion amongst yourselves as you're working throughout the day. So let me just, as an example, there's a card that has a kid in a Superman costume. You got that one? Dare to Dream, doesn't it say?
Yes.
See, that's, I'm going to just give an example. I hope I'm not stealing your thunder. I love that one because Man of La Mancha has been my hero since my 20s, to dream the impossible dream. And I kept telling myself over the years, do not get cynical, keep dreaming. So I feel now, as 71, I kind of have permission to dream, and I don't want to give that up. All right, there's an example. I don't know about the one that frightens me, but I'm sure there's one in there. Anyway, you get the idea?
Yeah.
So let's just, who would like to be bold? So, all right, you do it. You got it.
You stole part.
Did I? Was that your reasoning?
No.
Okay, good.
Part
see?
Of it, part of it.
Okay. So hold it up so everybody can see it.
Daring to dream for me means nothing more than always moving forward, always looking for what I can do next, never stating, as you say, never say, never admitting I can't do something, but more, how can I do something?
Okay, all right. What about your scary one?
Trusting.
Trusting?
Yeah, in other words, I have to give up the fact that I won't be able to do everything that I'd like to for myself at times. I have to trust other people can help me.
All right, thank you. Anybody else? Yes.
I'll go.
Hold it up so we can see it.
I picked stretching horizons.
Is that a bridge?
It is a bridge.
Okay, good.
And what it meant to me is I went to Europe this summer, and I hadn't been there since I was a teenager with a backpack. And my joke was, yeah, everybody should go once every 50 years, whether they need it or not. It just really set me on fire to go explore. I mean, we've been busy doing other things, and it's fine that I haven't been there yet, but now I'm really ready to go and see more places and experience more places that I haven't been. And I better hurry up because, you know, I'm 67, and possibly in a few more years, I won't feel physically able to go. So I really want to take advantage of feeling this, you know, some people are, oh, it was a trip of a lifetime. I'm like, I'm going back, like, next year and the year after. But, and then the scary thing is, that would be x-rays of my body, because I am disabled, and it's from an accident that I was in when I was 26, and I've dealt with it, and I've lived my life, and had kids, raised kids, and worked full-time, done all the things, but sometimes with great difficulty and a lot of pain, and guess what? As you get old, these things don't get better. And I've got some real pretty serious issues, and that's scary.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Who else? Yeah. Thomas.
Yeah, Steve. So mine would be the same, asking for help. That's because we had to be power of attorney and an executor, and with a lot of family members and friends really gone through this and all that, and how helpless they became.
Whether it's from scary stroke, for you? That's scary for you to think about?
Really, seeing how helpless they became, whether it was dementia, whether it was stroke, whether it was bankrupt, whatever. Yeah, asking for help, I think, is maybe the scariest thing I can think of.
Okay. And what's your yay?
I think this walking through shadow is great.
Why do you like that?
Yeah, well, because I think everything has a shadow, every individual, every organization, and we've avoided it a lot, and it just seems like a great adventure.
Okay.
And going into death seems like it could be an adventure, but it's going to some pretty shadowy stuff.
Yeah. Thank you. Anybody else? Over here. Yes.
Yeah, I want to go back for half a step. I've always mortified my kids.
Good for
their
you.
Whole life. That's all mom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Good for you.
So that's been fun. Traveling lightly.
Okay.
I am down to 288 square feet.
Oh, my gosh.
And
I'm impressed.
Two and about to have my third trip of a lifetime. The first one was in 2000, camping in Pakistan, China, Tibet, and Nepal.
Wow.
For 6 weeks. The second was 2013 on a sailing ship from New Zealand around the Horn to the Falkland Islands.
Oh, wow.
And now this coming spring, 3 months in Israel. And people say, well, what are you going to do? I'll figure it out.
That's awesome. No wonder your kids are mortified. And probably a little terrified.
That's their problem.
Yeah, oh, I love that. Yeah, that's their problem. Well, thank you very much for sharing that. Others, what do you have?
I have learning as something I'm loving to do now that I've retired, and I'm working on quilts, and each time, and I create, I don't use a pattern, but to learn how to do the different issues, like I'm learning how to do curves, because most people, it's all straight lined in some fashion, rectangles, squares, triangles. I'm doing curves, and I call them wonky curves. They're not straight curves, and that's my learning one. Accepting who we are, that's hard for me to do, because I'm changing as I go on, and I have to accept that.
Yeah.
Like I had to drop singing in choir because the music notes and the words weren't going together, so I didn't feel safe singing in choir. I'd make mistakes for them. That's not good. We've got a good choir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. Anybody else want to share?
I have one.
Okay.
One I have here is an old dilapidated pickup truck, and the title is Lasting the Distance.
Oh.
And, you know, it reminded me of the fact that I have a fear of losing my memory. And I think that's probably kind of common to a lot of people, but to suddenly not be able to recognize your family or to not recognize your kids or recognize things that are normal, that actually frightens me. And so I'm hoping that I can go the distance and stay lucid and keep my body in some kind of physical shape that I can move around a little bit. So
yeah.
That's the second one I have here is a little more difficult to talk about. It's called forgiving. And it's one of the things I have problem with. Over my lifetime, and I'm sure I'm not unusual in this respect, that I've had people that have seriously offended me. And not many, but it's just kind of the normal course of events if you're living. And I have difficulty putting that aside and giving that person. I'm hoping that maybe with time that I can overcome that.
Okay. Thank you. By the way, that one you just mentioned about forgiving.
Yes.
In the research, which I'm trying not to be super academic about all this, but in the research, when we get into the later stages of life, the inability to forgive and holding on to grudges really is detrimental to aging. And so you hit on a real, and it's very common. It's not unusual. So I know you want to be unusual, but it's, you know.
Well, he is.
But, really.
But you've really hit on a very important part of adulting as an older adult. Yeah, thanks.
I have a question about that. Does the research show that people that have a hard time forgiving others have a hard time forgiving themselves?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
That's such a huge thing.
Well, and I won't get too far off on this, but I mean, it's a very difficult thing because the wounds are so deep. And sometimes the people aren't around anymore to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat with a woman who had a stroke. I had her daughter with me because trying to understand her was very difficult and she couldn't write. But she was deeply troubled based upon an assessment that I did with her. And we finally worked through the whole thing and she ended up in tears as she finally let go of some of this stuff, the hurt that this her relative had done to her. But she carried that, you know, all through this, and what a relief when you can just finally, and I keep praying for that too. I got a few on my list that, you know. So anyway, others.
I'll share mine. So this was the one that was troubling for me. It's hearing the pain.
Hearing the pain?
Hearing the pain.
Hearing the pain.
It's like,
okay.
Like what you were saying, you know, as we get older, like things aren't getting better. And sometimes I get afraid of painful things that's happening to my body.
But the really exciting one was Seeking Balance. And this is a skateboard that's going flying. Person's going one way, the skateboard's going the other way. So this just represents an adventure for me, and I'm still downhill skiing, even though I've had several injuries and not that long ago. And I'm working on seeking balance, like with still working part-time and so just balancing, you know, that and trips and, you know, everything.
Sure.
So.
Anyway. All right. Thank you. And you had...
Oh, standing in uncertainty. There's a guy standing outside of a, looks like a train, like maybe he doesn't know where he's going. I think some of the uncertainty at this point in my life is retiring and planning the rest of your life, not being what you were, you know, like your profession. But the other thing that bothers me most about uncertainty is just children, what's happening with children and the uncertainty in their lives and trying to help with their lives. And then the positive was growing in wisdom. And I came to Holden for a lot of reasons, but I seem to like being here a lot because of the wisdom that other people have that I can gain wisdom from as well.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? I don't want you to feel cheated. The idea behind this is to get us to thinking about, you know, what excites us and what does not excite us. Because really, in aging circles, there's basically two ways that people approach aging. One is negative, and the other is positive. And there's a whole school of psychology that is developing around positive psychology to help us reframe our thinking. And I used to, there's a Bible passage, I hope I can say this in front of everybody, but I will. I used to just hate it. I hated it.
Hated what?
A Bible passage.
What?
A Bible passage. Romans chapter 8. Verse 28, all things work together for good to those who love the Lord. Hello, my wife died at age 32. Explain to me that passage. And then other life events goes on that, no, they were not. By all definitions, were not good. I hated that. And I've wrestled with that passage for decades. But in my own mind, I've come to realize that passage is about reframing. All things do work together. I look back, I wouldn't be who I am today. And that's not why she died. But in reframing that experience, I'm a whole different person. And I think in some respects, a stronger person because of what I went through with two preschoolers and a wife dying. All things work together for good. And you put that with Romans 12. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that, to me, has become a way to look at aging. Yes. My hands always hurt. Okay? That's the way it is. So I've gotten to the point that I don't mind asking a 20-year-old to open a bottle for me. It's all right. So looking at aging in a positive way. Now, there are days I don't feel so positive about it. Okay? But when we look at aging, I watch people come into assisted living and really coming into nursing homes feeling like victims. They're doing this to me. they're making me move out of my house. They're making me come. They promised me they'd never put me in a nursing home, and here I am. And they are bitter, and they are angry, and oh my goodness, is it difficult for them and everybody around them. And yet, nursing homes can be real gifts to people. I mean, I've worked now for 10 years in that situation. There can be a lot of good for families and for individuals through that. But how do we help people not be victims? And that's what I want to talk about the rest of the week. How we can, I'll just give you one example from my own life, which I'm going to try not to do too much. I'm big into this aging thing because I am. But I just sold my townhouse. 2 years ago, I decided I don't want to own anything anymore. I am not handy with tools. I do not like repairing things. And I don't like surprise expenses when something blows up in the basement. I didn't want to own. So in the face of tradition, I sold my house last May and moved into an apartment. The number of people that have said, "That's so dumb." And in my opinion, they're wrong. I'm doing me, okay? And I had choices to make. And Viktor Frankl in that book, you know, when he was in the concentration camp, said, "They can take everything away from me but my mind." I always have choices. I am not a victim unless I allow myself to become a victim. I have choices. And that's something I would encourage us to hold on to. You're here by choice. We do things because we choose to do them. And I believe, as a Christian, for me this flows out of prayer. As God shows me the choices before me and leads me by the Spirit to the choices that are better for me than what I might do for myself. But I think it's disastrous to go into aging situations feeling like we have no choice. And that's what we want to look at, especially Wednesday. We're going to just look at options for housing and all the decisions that have to be made. And I'm going to raise some issues with that because I don't know. Again, you have to do you. You may want a huge McMansion or something overlooking a bay, and that's really cool. That is really cool. I like my little apartment. That's doing me. So we want to look at it, but to recognize you have choices. So I want to be sensitive. Oh, we have plenty of time. All right. Well, students would never let me teach without a clock before my face. And if there was no clock for me to see, they appointed a timekeeper. Because I think they're wrong. Let me just bring out some things about aspects of aging. And it kind of fits with what we were hearing from the cards. Somebody even said this. One positive aspect of aging, you are wiser than you were at age 20. Yeah. And sometimes I tell myself when I'm going to teach, especially college age students, no matter how bad I am that day, I still know more than they do. At least on that topic. You are wiser. And you can make better decisions because of what you've been through. And one of the things that I've learned, especially working in the care centers, man, do these people know God. And they know the faithfulness of God. And when even my memory care people can recite scripture passages to me, and they can talk to me about how God got them through various things. they are wiser even with a failing memory. And that's something to celebrate. And for the most part, you are confident. I mean, people, you have to have a certain amount of confidence to get here. You are confident because you've been there, you've done that, it's not your first rodeo. And you can offer wisdom to other people. And here's a fun thing about aging. You are your own person. You are your own person. Now, I'm going to admit I'm 71. Would you give a ballpark?
78.
78. Now, here we are, fairly close in age. But look at the vast difference in experience. I've done a lot of traveling, but I've never camped in Pakistan and Tibet, or...
Yeah.
What? Two vastly different people because of our different experiences. I've always wanted to live on the 17th floor of a high-rise in the heart of the city, like you do. Woofta, would that be a dream? But in Minneapolis, on my pension, it's not realistic. But we're same, similar age, but two different experiences. And so, at this stage, you are your unique person with unique experiences. I've never quilted in my life, nor do I want to. You know, but look at the beautiful art form that comes out of that. Or knitting. I mean, that's just amazing to me that people can do all that little stuff with a couple of sticks and make it come out. But you are your own person, and that's cool. You are a conduit to the past. You have the family history. You know... A lot of times young people don't want to hear it, but when they get backed into a corner, I think, at least my experience has been, they will finally ask, well, what was it like, da 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 da. And you know that. And I think it's something to celebrate. You are either a grandparent or uncle or aunt or whatever, but you've been through it, the gamut, and you know how to support. My grandma got me through my wife's illness and death, because she'd lost her husband and both sons had died, and she just kept saying, God will get you through. God will get you through. And I claimed that, and I hung on to that. And, again, evidenced by the fact you're here, you are motivated. You are motivated. You did not stay on your balcony wherever you're from. You got here because you wanted to be here. You're motivated. You are more spiritual than you were at age 20 because of your journey with God and the reflection over what God has brought into your life. You also, while we have a lot of fear, I've got some of the same fears about memory loss. this will just show I'm psychotic and you'll never come back again, but I'm claustrophobic. And I don't know why I had this dream a couple weeks ago about being in a memory care unit and being locked in. And that dream suddenly gave me insight into why some of my people keep running to the doors and shaking and wanting out. I'm going, yeah, I would be one of those people. And so I'm going to view, I've started, because of that dream, I've started taking one of the memory care people with me upstairs for Bible class to get her out of that room, because she needs to be out. But you get a sensitivity and a confidence about God working in your life and bringing. So, these are the kind of things we're going to keep looking at all week. What thoughts are you having at this point?
Steve, I have a thought.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you have planned for the rest of the week, and I don't want to take anybody off on a chase a squirrel. to use your term. But you've caught my attention when you talk about God playing a role in your part, prayer playing a role in coming over your adversity and some of the things you face. Now, I think that's probably true of everybody in here. We could all have conversations where we talk about soul building and grace and forgiveness and mercy and atonement. Where I have a problem is, and I have friends and I have two daughters-in-laws that are having problems with aging parents, and they're not believers. Neither one of my daughters-in-law are believers. Their parents aren't believers. And they're just getting, both the parents and my daughters-in-laws are getting meaner and angrier as they watch these things happen to their parents. And every time I try to use some of the words that we would all use as a common lexicon, it's just like shooting BBs off the hull of a ship. I mean, I can't penetrate anybody and have them understand that there are blessings in everything you do. Perfect example. When I leave here, I'm going to go see two friends of mine. He and his wife, they've been friends for 37 years. And 3 weeks ago, both his parents, they're 80 years old, had a stroke on the same day. His mother had a stroke. The dad took his mother to the hospital. They said, we're going to keep her for 3 or 4 days. The dad came home and had a massive stroke. And he now needs two people to lift him. He has to have a hoist. Because of the levels of care and because of what's available on Whidbey Island, there's no place where the mom and dad can be together. They're facing $18,000 a month in nursing care expenses. And I could go on. But I don't even recognize my friend and his wife anymore. They've gotten so mean and bitter because of this experience. So I think there's kind of two things that are interesting. One is how we deal with ourselves, and we can all deal with each other in one fashion. But what about those external factors where, what do you tell these people?
Yeah. I just wish you hadn't asked that question. Why do bad things happen to good people? I mean, that's one of the struggles we've had. In fact, I taught a 6-week course entitled that one time because of lots of reasons. Short thing, just my perspective, sometimes what I have to learn to do is shut up, which for me is difficult. And just sit with people. As in training as a chaplain, I was present when this 6-month-old got a bone marrow transplant because of some disease where the bones were so brittle if you touched him it would break. And so we had all the prayers and the blessing of the bone marrow and all that. And 4 days later, I was on call, and I got called down to the hospital at 10 o'clock at night. And as I'm going to the room number I was given, I went, oh, excrement, that's the kid. And I got in there, and he was rejecting the bone marrow, which I'll be a little graphic to tell you so you know how it impacted me. The blood vessels were disintegrating and he was bloating with his own blood. And I walk into that room with grandparents, aunts and uncles and parents, and it was, what do you say? And grandma, one of the grandmas was sitting over on a couch and she was just rocking back and forth. And she kept saying, I sang Jesus loves me to him every night. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense. And all I could do was rock back and forth with her and say, Grandma, you're right. It doesn't make any sense. And the other grandma was a Methodist pastor who baptized the child. And at the end of the baptismal, I started leading the family and singing Jesus Loves Me as he was dying. It was just powerful. But all I could do was just be there. And I think, you know, with these stroke victims, oh my gosh.
That's the one thing you can do is be there. Be quiet, yeah. Just be there. There's a wonderful story I could tell you later, I won't bore everybody, but be there.
Just well, that's why I'm heading to Seattle, and I want to stop here just, first and take in some, yeah, just all this goodness.
Be there as much as you can.
Cruise all over to Seattle. So.
Yeah, just be there.
Yeah, and there's many times nothing to say.
I have a friend who was a hospital chaplain, and he was doing his internship doing that. He went into one room, and he didn't know what to do, and the person was sleeping, so and he was trying to think. There was some, I can't remember everything that was going on. He ended up just sitting there quietly, head on his hand, and just stayed there for the longest time. And he thought, no, that's it, you know. And then he went out. And a family member of this person sought him out another day and said, are you the chaplain that prayed with my family? Yeah. You can't know how much that meant to them. Yeah. And he just sat there and was quiet. That's what he did.
Yeah, well, I saw that when my wife was dying. The hospice chaplain was a Quaker, and they all say, nothing. Yeah. Like, don't you have a mainline denomination chaplain that can send me, that can, you know, speak words? And like, no, we don't.
But are you hearing the collective wisdom now that is coming from this group? And the questions that we all have and struggle with, and both the pain and the joy that we carry in the wisdom of our age. I mean, you've got the courage to go and be with them. And that comes out of your own experience, because you know what it was like to have people be with you. And that's how it plays out for us in aging. Some of it scares us spitless. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, we'll get to some of that this week. Usually I have three times the amount of time that I've been given this week to work through some of these things. And so I'm trying to be very careful how we do that. But we can go after any squirrel you want, because I'm good at that. Both of you, so just whoever wants to know.
Just him.
Yeah.
Point to him.
Oh, yes.
I appreciate you struggling with Romans 8:28. All things work together. That has been a problem for me for a long time. And I had a friend help me with that, in that there are some translations, and I think the New Revised Standard does this. The Greek also lends itself to this interpretation. In all things, God works together for good, which is hugely different than all things work together for the good, because you and I and us have seen the tragedies that have taken place where there just isn't going to be any good that comes out of that. I mean, I'm being very dramatic here, but sometimes the stuff happens, the shit happens, and it just is not going to get better until the grave. And so that becomes oppressive. What have I done wrong that it isn't working to the good? What is my problem with my faith, etc.? But to know that in all stuff, there is the presence that is working for life in the midst of death and dying.
Yeah. And you know, working as a chaplain, I've always loved Psalm 23. But working as a chaplain, especially with people in their last breath, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil. And I still go King James. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. That has taken on a depth of meaning for me through my residence. As I've watched them experience that and live that, and I think that's another blessing of getting older. We know the depth of some of these things. And all things work together for good. For me now, it has a depth that it never had before. And so, yeah, and we're go in peace and serve the Lord. The dinner bell has just rung.
Thank you.
Yeah, hope you come back tomorrow.
Yeah.